You are listening to In Pursuit of Development with Dan Bannick.
Welcome to a brand new season of In Pursuit of Development. I'm Dan Bannick. Before we begin, I want to share something personal. It's been quite a long time since the last episode aired, over a year and a half. That absence wasn't planned. In October of last year, I had a heart attack. It was sudden, frightening, and completely unexpected. The months that followed were filled with hospital visits and the slow and humbling work of recovery. The good news is that I'm doing better now. I'm recovering steadily and feeling ready, grateful really, to begin yet another new season with you. Although the struggle continues, it has left me with a deeper sense of gratitude. Gratitude for the welfare state that supported me. Gratitude for the doctors and nurses who gave me back to my family. Gratitude for support from friends, colleagues, and loved ones. And gratitude for the simple chance to feel the warmth of the Oslo sun on my face. Life offers no guarantees. Everything can change suddenly, without warning. That realization has sharpened my attention to the ordinary. Listening to music with care, calling my father or children for no reason, noticing how routine hours quietly add up to a life. We don't really control the trials that come our way, only how we respond. My response, it must be said, has been imperfect, but it has been carried by grace I did not earn and help I could not provide myself. That is enough to begin again and to keep beginning for as long as I am given. And so rather unusually, I've decided to feature myself in this opening episode. I want to set the stage for what's to come by reflecting on the major geopolitical shifts and development debates shaping our world right now, before we welcome a wide range of guests in the weeks and months ahead. The world we live in today feels unsettled. The familiar rules no longer seem to apply in the same way they once did. Over the last few years, we've witnessed a remarkable transformation in the international landscape. Trade wars between the United States and China, a weakening of multilateral institutions, the re-emergence of geopolitical blocs, and an increasingly transactional form of global politics. For decades after the Cold War, the liberal international order, anchored in free trade, multilateral cooperation, and shared rules, offered a kind of backbone to global affairs. It wasn't perfect, of course, but there was a sense that disputes could be channeled through institutions like the World Trade Organization, that global development efforts could be coordinated through multilateral frameworks, and that crises could be addressed collectively. Today, that sense of stability has been replaced by something more fragmented, more contested, and at times more chaotic. Power is no longer concentrated in one dominant pole. The United States remains a global power, but it now shares the stage with China, India, the European Union, and increasingly assertive regional actors in Africa, the Middle East, Latin America, and Southeast Asia. This shift from a unipolar to a multipolar world is reshaping the very foundations of international cooperation. Some scholars have described moments like this as periods between hegemonies, where the old order is fading, but a new one has yet to fully take shape. In this interregnum, rules are being contested, alliances are shifting, and new narratives are emerging about what the global order should look like. One of the clearest manifestations of this shift is the erosion of multilateralism. Institutions like the WTO are increasingly gridlocked. Climate negotiations struggle to produce meaningful commitments. The Bretton Woods system, which has structured the global economy for decades, is under strain. The UN Security Council, designed for a very different era, often finds itself paralyzed by great power rivalry. In the meantime, the rise of what some call transactional geopolitics is changing how states interact. Instead of relying on stable alliances or shared institutions, countries are increasingly engaging in short-term and interest-based deals. India's Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar has described this as operating in a transactional bazaar of global politics, where countries pursue multiple alignments simultaneously, guided by pragmatism rather than ideology. Trade wars are a vivid example. The United States has imposed tariffs on a range of Chinese goods, and China has responded in kind. More recently, Washington has also targeted Brazil and India with harsh tariffs, measures that will have huge consequences, not only for their domestic industries, but also for global supply chains. For Brazil, agricultural exports and manufacturing sectors are at risk, while India's pharmaceutical industry, long a crucial provider of affordable medicines to much of the global south and increasingly to the global north, that industry faces disruptions that could limit access to essential drugs worldwide. These escalating trade measures have already disrupted supply chains and encouraged a trend known as friendshoring, where countries shift production to politically aligned partners. While this creates new opportunities for some states, it also risks bypassing low-income economies that had benefited from earlier waves of globalization and now threatens to make essential goods from food to medicine less accessible and more expensive for millions of people. At the same time, geopolitical tensions are intersecting with economic fragility. More than 50 low- and middle-income countries are now in or near debt distress. High interest rates, tighter credit, and a retrenchment of global banks have made it harder for frontier markets to access long-term and cheap financing. Conflicts in Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, Myanmar, and across the Sahel are disrupting trade routes and creating instability that ripples far beyond national borders. What we are really facing in 2025 is not a single crisis, but seven interlocking ones. First, fragmented and transactional geopolitics. Second, democracy under pressure. Third, persistent conflict and insecurity. Fourth, economic fragility and debt. Fifth, a triple planetary crisis of climate change, biodiversity loss, and pollution. Sixth, a turbulent energy transition. And seventh, disruptive technologies like AI. None of these challenges exist in isolation. They overlap, compound, and test the resilience of societies everywhere. It's easy to look at all of this and feel overwhelmed, to see only crisis. And to be fair, the challenges are indeed enormous. But that's not the whole story, because alongside this turbulence, something equally significant is happening: the rise of the Global South. The term Global South has become much more prominent in recent years, and it's also a complex and contested concept. Historically, it was often used as a synonym for the Third World, referring to low-income countries, many of which experienced colonialism and later pursued development outside the orbit of Cold War superpowers. But today, the Global South should be understood not just as a geographical category, but as a geohistorical and political concept. The Global South refers to a diverse set of countries that share, in different ways, experiences of marginalization within the global system and aspirations for a more just international order. It's about historical trajectories of colonialism and structural inequality, but also about new forms of agency and leadership. What's striking is how much more visible and assertive the Global South has become in shaping global debates. This isn't just about rhetoric, it's actually about real influence. Take the G20, for example. In 2023, during India's presidency, the language of the voice of the Global South became central to the G20 agenda. In 2024, Brazil built on this by foregrounding inequality, climate justice, and poverty eradication as global priorities. In 2025, under South Africa's presidency, these themes are being pushed even further. The African Union's inclusion as a permanent G20 member in 2023 was a watershed moment, symbolizing a more inclusive global conversation. South-South cooperation has also taken on new dimensions. Historically anchored in movements like the Non-Alignment Movement or the G77, today it includes a wide range of partnerships between China and African countries through FOCAC, between ASEAN and Latin American countries, and through the BRICS grouping, which has expanded its membership and influence. But we should be clear. The Global South is not a monolith. It's an incredibly diverse and dynamic field of actors. China is both a champion of Global South solidarity and a major global power with its own strategic interests. India positions itself as a bridge between North and South. Middle powers like Turkey, Gulf states, Brazil, and South Africa are pursuing their own agendas. Smaller states are finding new spaces to assert themselves through coalitions and issue-based alliances. This diversity is both a strength and a challenge. On the one hand, it allows for a plurality of voices, experiences, and strategies. On the other, it makes coordination much more complicated and raises questions about whose interests exactly are actually being represented. There are also debates about whether the rise of the Global South will lead to a more democratic and equitable global order. Some scholars see it as a potentially emancipatory moment, a chance to rewrite the rules in a more fair way. Others are more skeptical, pointing out that inequalities within the Global South are actually deepening, that authoritarian tendencies are present in some of its leading states, and that new forms of dependency can emerge even as old ones fade. Nonetheless, the rise of the Global South is reshaping global governance in real ways. Countries, once seen primarily as rule takers, are increasingly becoming rule makers, whether through creating new institutions, influencing existing ones, or setting agendas in global negotiations. This has major implications for global development. On trade and investment, for example, as supply chains are reconfigured, many emerging markets are becoming new hubs of production and finance. But to seize these opportunities, they need patient capital and institutional support, something development finance institutions are increasingly trying to provide, but perhaps also struggling with. On climate change, the energy transition is now hinged on what happens in the Global South. Many of the fastest growing emitters are emerging economies, reliant on coal. Renewable deployment is growing, but not fast enough to meet global targets. At the same time, these countries are among the most vulnerable to climate impacts, facing floods, droughts, and extreme weather events. On technology, AI and digital public infrastructure are transforming development possibilities. India's Aadhaar and Unified Payments Interface, or UPI, systems have inspired similar efforts across Africa, helping drive financial inclusion and public service delivery. Across the African continent, fintech startups are connecting farmers and small businesses to markets and credit. AI-based tools are helping farmers anticipate weather patterns and adapt to climate shocks. But the digital divide remains a real risk, and ensuring that these technologies are inclusive is a major policy challenge. And on urbanization and demographics, Africa's population is set to double by 2050. Cities across the Global South are growing at unprecedented rates. This presents huge challenges for infrastructure, jobs, and services, but also opportunities to rethink development models for a more sustainable and inclusive future. Now, it's important to acknowledge that these transformations are happening amid profound uncertainty. The global order is not yet settled, as I mentioned earlier. We are in that interregnum, a transitional moment where the direction of change is still up for grabs. And this is where I want to end today's episode, with the politics of hope. Too often, the narrative we hear, especially in mainstream media, is one of crisis. Pandemics, wars, climate disasters, democratic backsliding, and yes, these are real. But if we focus only on the bleak, we risk losing sight of the progress that has been made and the possibilities that exist. Hope is not about ignoring problems. It's about grounding optimism in evidence. Since 1990, child mortality has fallen by more than half worldwide. Over a billion people have been lifted out of extreme poverty. Life expectancy has risen dramatically. Vaccines, literacy, and access to clean water have expanded even in fragile contexts. Renewable energy is now one of the fastest growing sectors worldwide. Crises, paradoxically, often drive innovation. The pandemic led to unprecedented scientific collaboration. Climate challenges are spurring investments in green technologies. Social movements around the world are pushing for justice and accountability in ways that are reshaping politics. In the Global South in particular, there's an extraordinary amount of creativity and experimentation happening. New institutions are being built, old ones are being challenged, and countries are asserting agency in ways that would have been unthinkable just a generation ago. Of course, there are no guarantees. The rise of the Global South could lead to a more equitable and democratic order, but it could also reproduce hierarchies in new forms. That's why it is important to pay attention, to engage critically, and to amplify voices that push for justice, inclusion, and sustainability. As we embark on this new season, my aim is to explore these dynamics in depth. Over the coming weeks and months, you'll hear from a wide range of guests from around the world: scholars, activists, politicians, policymakers, media persons, offering diverse and interdisciplinary perspectives on the challenges and opportunities shaping global development today. Yes, the world is turbulent, but it is also full of possibility. And in this moment of flux, the choices made by actors in the Global South and the ways in which the rest of the world engages with them will shape the future of global development in very decisive ways. So, welcome to Season 6 of In Pursuit of Development. I'd be very grateful if you could help spread the word about the show among friends, colleagues, and on social media, so that together we can continue to expand this global conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to In Pursuit of Development with Professor Dan Bannick from the University of Oslo. Please email your questions, comments, and suggestions to inpursuitofdevelopment@gmail.com.